Support for this public radio podcast is provided by Cleveland Clinic, expanding globally and committed every day to providing innovative treatments and hope to patients worldwide. Online at clevelandclinic.org. And by Constellation Energy, a global provider of fuels, power, and energy services, committed to environmentally sound, energy-efficient, and sustainable energy solutions. Constellation Energy, the way energy works.
You better not blink.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott J. Gow. If you didn't know things move fast on Wall Street, this morning is a brutal reminder. 2 weeks ago, investment bank Bear Stearns was worth $20 billion. Last night, it was sold for about 1% of that, $236 million. J.P. Morgan Chase is the buyer. They're paying $2 a share for one of Wall Street's oldest and biggest investment houses. This stunning collapse prompted the Federal Reserve to take extraordinary action on a Sunday night. The Fed cut its emergency lending rate for banks and set up a direct loan operation for Wall Street. These moves were designed to keep the stock markets from going haywire this morning. There has been a lot of selling, but not a complete panic. Here's where we stand right now. In the first 20 minutes, the Dow is down 137 points, more than a percent, to 11,813. The NASDAQ has dropped 35. The S&P 500 is down 21. In Europe so far, the markets have dropped about 3%. In Asia, stocks closed the day 4 to 5% lower. We'll have more on Bear Stearns in a moment, but for the market's reaction, we're joined by Peru Saxena, an investment advisor in Hong Kong. Peru, what was the sense in Asia today?
I think most people still believe that the worst is yet to come. I don't think the markets have discounted the worst yet. I still maintain my view that the Asian economy is doing absolutely fine. China is growing by 10-11%. India is growing by 9% or so. So these problems that we are seeing in the financial markets are coming basically from the Western world in the financial sector.
What do you think it's going to take to stabilize the markets there in Asia?
I think we would have to see some more bankruptcies, unfortunately, because whenever you see a colossal boom in one sector, that is almost inevitably followed by a gigantic bust. So I think that the financial sector is likely to disappoint in the months and years ahead. I wouldn't touch financials even with my own money today.
Wow. All right. Peru Saxena in Hong Kong. Thanks so much.
No problem. My pleasure.
Bear Stearns fell fast and it fell hard. And it goes beyond the bank's investments in mortgage-backed securities. On the line with us now is Diane Swonk, an economist in Chicago who's been following this closely. Diane, Bear Stearns sells for $2 a share. How is that possible?
Well, the alternative was Bear Stearns, if they did not have a buyer, might have had to go under and go bankrupt. This way, they become a part of another company. Certainly, there was some influence by the Fed saying, get this deal done. Bear Stearns lost a lot of money in this, but it's that or zero.
Bear was seemingly okay middle of last week. What happened?
This is exactly the problem. It's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy where panic overtook the market. Even those people who believed in it couldn't keep their money in Bear Stearns. They advise their clients to pull their money out of Bear Stearns just as a precautionary move. If you have enough people do that at once, you have what we call as an old-fashioned run on the bank.
But could this be a red flag that other Wall Street banks could be in trouble?
Well, actually, the Fed went into great lengths to say Bear Stearns was a unique case. And the reality was Bear Stearns was not in as much trouble as their punishment sort of suggested. Bear Stearns was not considered the nicest bank in town. When we had crisis in the past, they didn't step up to the plate. And so, you know, there were many people who sort of turned their back on Bear Stearns. That also exacerbated the case for Bear Stearns having such severe problems.
But still, Diane, you have the former Fed chairman, Alan Greenspan, now saying this could be the worst financial crisis since the end of World War II. It seems like there is some substance here.
Oh, there absolutely is substance. You know, panic is reality. And I think really the last couple of moves by the Fed, I don't think they're fully understood by the market yet. But we may look back and say this was a Fed that finally got from being behind the game to being on top of its game.
But so far, as you said, the markets haven't been soothed by this. What is it going to take?
Well, one, time is what heals all wounds, and the Fed's going to do more. We're also likely going to see a 1% cut in interest rates on Tuesday, and it's not inconsequential. I mean, those people who say it doesn't matter, anyone who's got a credit card rate that's tied to the prime lending rate will see a reduction in their interest rates. That's important.
Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial, thanks so much.
Thank you.
At Bear Stearns' headquarters in New York this morning, there was a $2 bill taped to the revolving doors, a grim reminder of the takeover price for the employees of the company. There are 14,000 of them, and their futures are uncertain at best. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
Bear Stearns traders and dealers were told this morning that they are now J.P. Morgan employees, and their company stock, which had hit highs of $170 a share last summer, is now worth just $2 a share. Hugh Johnson is chairman at money management firm Johnson Illington Advisors. He says Bear Stearns employees could lose more than just their salaries.
Most of the employees had a significant percentage or meaningful percentage of their assets tied up in Bear Stearns stock. And now, of course, there's been that fire sale and the value of their nest egg has been reduced considerably.
Johnson says many Bear Stearns employees have probably had their resumes ready for months. But with Wall Street in the throes of a credit crisis and recession looming, they may just be jumping from one sinking ship to another. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Monday, March 17th on Marketplace.org. The violent protests in Tibet were also a big story over the weekend. The longtime push for political freedom is at the heart of these protests, but there's also an undercurrent of economic disenchantment. Scott Tong has more from Beijing.
The young Tibetan rioters targeted mostly Chinese-owned shops in the capital Lhasa. In fact, only a few stores are reportedly still standing. Many ethnic Tibetans grouse that the Chinese have taken all their jobs. It's a bread-and-butter issue that has stoked anti-Chinese sentiment elsewhere, in places like Indonesia. In the last two decades, ethnic Chinese have streamed into Tibet with the government's blessing. It's part of Beijing's larger effort to assimilate the potentially breakaway province. That campaign also includes massive investment in Tibet's infrastructure and tourism industries. Last year, Tibet's economy grew a whopping 14%, leaving the rest of the country behind at a mere 11%. Still, the locals feel they haven't shared in the boom. In Beijing, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
More Americans are getting their news from the web these days. Obviously, that's bad news for newspapers. But a study out today gives kind of a different twist on this. Here's John Dimsdale.
Americans may be reading fewer newspapers, but that doesn't mean newspaper companies are losing readers.
If you look at the top 10 newspapers, their websites have a larger share of the overall audience than those newspapers do in print.
Tom Rosensteel is the author of the latest report on the state of the news media by the Project for Excellence in Journalism.
The problem facing old media is not really loss of audience. It's loss of advertising because a lot of advertisers no longer need to hitch their messages to the news to reach consumers. Toyota can have the Toyota website. Circuit City can have its own website and doesn't necessarily need those inserts in the Sunday newspaper.
Rosensteel says to survive, newspaper companies will have to find a new way to make advertising online just as attractive and persuasive as it is in newspapers. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
We've heard a lot this year about presidential hopefuls fundraising online. But when it comes to spending those political dollars, the candidates are going offline. Stacey Vanek Smith explains.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
All told, candidates are expected to spend almost $5.5 billion on political ads by Election Day. About 90% of that will go to TV and mailings. Less than 1% will go to online ads. Richard Kaczynski is Yahoo's VP of political ad sales. He addressed that imbalance at a recent conference.
In political campaigning, the old guard and the ways of old still reign supreme.
Still, the campaign has advanced the way candidates use the internet, says Kate Kay with ClickZ News.
Definitely a significant year, just in terms of them recognizing the potential impact of having a Facebook page or of having a MySpace page. We're seeing them pay a lot closer attention to the web.
Kay also points out that $55 million is a sizable amount, especially for online ads, which tend to be much cheaper than those on TV. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Guinness has been trying to sell the idea of making today a national holiday. Maybe you've seen the TV ads, but perhaps you weren't aware that a company with a very Germanic name is joining in the St. Paddy's Day effort. That would be Anheuser-Busch. Ashley Milne-Tite has more.
For years, barmen have been making a popular drink called a black and tan. Traditionally, it's a blend of Guinness, which is owned by Diageo, and Bass, which Anheuser-Busch imports to the US. But recently, Guinness has been trying to convince drinkers to ditch the Bass and use a Diageo brand instead. Harry Shoemaker is with Beer Business Daily.
Bass sales have been diminishing year over year for quite some time now. And one of the reasons is because people aren't mixing it with Guinness anymore in the black and tan.
By hitching a ride on Guinness's Paddy's Day campaign, Anheuser wants to remind drinkers of Bass's part in the traditional black and tan. It hopes their nostalgia will turn into dollars. Shoemaker says the brand's joint effort to turn March 17th into a holiday is a long shot, but beer makers can always hope.
It would be good times for all beers, because anytime you have a day off on a holiday, beer sales go up.
By 25 to 50%. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.